Welcome to the NCO Journal podcast. I'm Sergeant Joni Jackson. Today, our discussion will encompass understanding Army doctrine and the NCO, also mission command and small unit leadership. Here with me is the Mission Command Center of Excellence, Sergeant Major Christopher Prosser. There were some major takeaways during your NCO PD, Sergeant Major. So let's highlight a few of those talking points. You discussed doctrinal changes throughout the years and why there are so many, and that it's important to understand the doctrine hierarchy. Can you explain doctrine hierarchy and its importance to an NCO's growth as a leader?
That's a great question. As doctrine has undergone quite a few revisions in the past year, and most of that is due to the fact that Field Manual 3-0 operations has changed the way that we fight, going back from a counterinsurgency focus into large-scale combat operations. Of the 15 ADPs that we revised this past summer, we considered two of them to be the capstone. So it's ADP-1, which is the Army, and ADP-3-0, which is operations. And they apply to all leaders. You know, the other ADPs, from training to leadership, mission command, operations, and others, explain the purpose of the Army and how we accomplish our mission. What's important for NCOs to understand is really the applicable doctrine truly does apply to the purpose of the profession of arms. So you got to ask yourself this question. So how do I embody the NCO creed with competence being our watchword without knowing our doctrine or how it applies to different situations? And another point is that we adopt these concepts and lessons learned. If you know multi-domain operations as a concept, all these external threats and challenges, all of those apply to doctrine, which is why it changes consistently as we move along and as technology is developed and as new threats emerge or old threats no longer become credible. So that's kind of how the Army defines its doctrine, how the Army creates its echelons of doctrine.
Doctrine is ever-changing, and it's a leader's responsibility to not only understand current doctrine, but to also apply it to situations accordingly. With learning how to apply doctrine, how can an NCO understand what specific doctrine is relevant to their current position?
Okay, so as non-commissioned officers, we know there's a ton of information out there. There's digital websites. There's places you can go. If you go to the Army Publishing Directorate website, there's all the ADPs, all the ATPs, everything out there. For NCOs, I don't expect a first sergeant to be an expert on FM 3-0 operations, which is about 250 pages, because that manual is written for echelons above the brigade level. But I would expect that first sergeant, as the senior trainer of the company, to be intimately familiar with the capstone Army Doctrinal Publication, or ADPs, especially ADP-70, which is training, ADP-622, Army Leadership in the Profession, and ADP-1, the Army, and then others based on what formation they're in. So then we get to the specific doctrine. So, for example, if a first sergeant is in a military intelligence formation, then ADP-20 should be considered required reading. To go further, the applicable downtrace doctrine and tactical and training publications will describe further the detailed how-to. Of course, training publications like MOS-specific training circulars, soldier training publications, and Army regulations, DAPAMs, all those different external, non-doctrinal, yet very important sources of information should also be consulted. Because for us to truly be expert non-commissioned officers, we have to be able to look at all these and truly understand our requirements and the standards.
What are some changes in ADP-6-22?
ADP-6-22 is actually something we're really proud of. The Army Profession and Leadership was published in August 2019 under a major rewrite. Change 1 was added in November of 2019 to expand on the professional aspects of leadership, so the profession itself. You'll see some subtle but important changes, like adding be, know, and do back into our leadership doctrinal discussions to align with the attributes and competency requirements in the leadership requirements model. The manual is also packed with vignettes of leadership in action, which is extremely important because when you add those practical use cases, it solidifies the ideas of what we need our leaders to do in large-scale combat operations, non-commissioned officers, officers, warrant officers, all cohorts. Something else has changed is the addition of humility as character attributes. So those are some of the big changes, but the manual itself is full of great principles grounded in history on how to lead others, which is a central role of non-commissioned officers.
Why is it important to understand the logic map of Army Leadership 6-22?
So almost all doctrine has at the beginning of the manual a logic chart, which kind of lays out the underpinnings and the framework for the doctrine that you're about to read. And so it kind of just logically walks you through what's contained in the manual. So, for example, in ADP-622, it starts with the profession, which is the big idea that we're a trusted vocation of soldiers and civilians with expertise and ethics, just to name a few. And then it talks about the profession of arms, and then it talks about the civilian corps. And as it works its way down, It goes into the ethic, and then it talks about leadership. So it has the definition of leadership. And then from there, it talks about the leadership requirements model, which lays out the attributes and competencies, the be, know, and do of what leaders are required to have in order to lead their organizations. And then at the bottom, it talks about outcomes. So again, this is a one-page logic map that kind of lays out the framework, in this instance, in ADP 622, for the profession in Army leadership. When you walk away from reading it, you should be able to look at it and say, okay, I understand the basic concept of what this manual is trying to get at. And then you can read into the manual to find out further details.
So the logic map is like a great visual learning tool to guide you to understand the text of 6-22.
Absolutely.
Now we're going to get into mission command and small unit leadership. You mentioned during NCOPD that mission command fits into the Army's approach for command and control to empower and decentralize. So what is required for leaders to empower and decentralize?
Coming from the Mission Command Center of Excellence, we've separated the warfighting function. We call it now command and control. But the approach to that, as we talk about mission command in and of itself, it's a lot clearer. At one point, there was a lot of confusion as to what is mission command. It gets confused between the warfighting function and between the philosophy. But if you look at the principles, and it lays it out. So you use two very important words, decentralize and empowerment. And so in order to do that, the principles that are laid out, and again, these are available in the logic chart and throughout the manual, talk about the principles of competence. Competence leads to mutual trust, which is the next one. Mutual trust is enabled by shared understanding, right? When an organization is flat and people have good communication across the formation, it enhances your ability to create mutual trust. You have the commander's intent when it's clear and concise and you lay out and you know exactly what your commander wants. That leads to mission orders. The use of mission orders to clarify items that you may not necessarily completely understand. It leads to things like discipline initiative. If you tell me exactly how to do something, I will do it exactly how you tell me. If you give me the commander's intent, which is the purpose, key tasks, and the end state, then I can use my discipline initiative with my expertise, again, leading back to doctrine as the underpinning and understanding what is expected, you will get a better result. And I think the last part is risk acceptance and understanding that risk acceptance does not start at the bottom, it starts at the top. Leaders have to accept risk for subordinates. And so when you have risk acceptance and you have all these other six principles of mission command, you can lead a highly functioning organization. You create this culture that doesn't just happen overnight. It takes time. But the whole point of having that culture means that you don't have to be micromanaging people. And non-commissioned officers, we don't like to be micromanaged. We like to be given the things like commander's intent. We like to be trusted. We want to be competent, ensure that everybody understands, to take that discipline initiative, understand where we can and can't accept risk appropriate to the situation, and accomplish the mission.
Speaking of culture, how does Army culture affect how NCOs lead?
Okay, so, you know, first thing we got to talk about is, you know, our Army culture, right? It's our beliefs, values, practices, right? It forms our unit trust, cohesion. It instills discipline. It gives the Army and its units their identity as a whole, right? So as we talk about a culture within the organization, we want to talk about, do we create cultures of competence? And again, I'm going to go back to the elements. Are we competent? Do we know our doctrine? Are we able to have professional conversations with our officer counterparts, with our warrant officer counterparts, with our civilian counterparts that is grounded in doctrine? Do we have that mutual trust? Is there trust that's created back and forth? And then again, that kind of goes to that risk acceptance. And I'm going to go to the end and talk about that last principle, but it kind of goes back into risk acceptance. Are you willing to accept risk for me to go out and do my job and to accomplish my mission and to lead my soldiers? Again, when we start talking about multi-domain operations and we start talking about being flexible and agile, this is exactly what we're talking about. In large-scale combat operations, we're not going to be able to have all the resources available at the platoon that's in contact at one time. We're going to have to be able to look across and say, okay, the commander's got to make decisions on where he's going to put those resources. We have to be able to trust that platoon sergeant, that platoon leader, that squad leader, those team leaders, and those soldiers to execute their mission, to understand, if they understand the intent, to understand those key tasks, the purpose, and the end state to be able to accomplish their mission. It takes a lot to build that trust. It takes time. And leaders have to be cognizant of that because you can lose it in a second, all the hard work that you've done to gain it. And again, it's a culture. It's not something you do. You don't just walk out and say, all right, today we will exercise mission command. It's something that you do day in, day out, whether it's working in the motor pool or it's out in the field or it's in large-scale combat operations. It's something that your organization has to embrace and your organization has to understand. Because again, at the beginning and the end of it is empowerment and decentralization. And you can't have that if you're not exercising those seven principles.
Well, how does cultivating that culture translate to an NCO's representation and reflection of themselves?
That's a great question, because I think one of the most important things that leaders have to do is to self-evaluate, and they have to be able to take objective looks at their organizations. A lot of times when you're down in the business doing the work, it gets really hard to see yourself, see your organization, and sometimes you have to pull back. We do have things like external evaluators at the DIRT CTCs, people that'll tell you what you're doing right and what you're doing wrong. But oftentimes, to understand the culture of your organization, it takes that person to stand back and give an honest assessment to themselves. And really to look at it within themselves and say, how can I do this better? As non-commissioned officers, again, if you're knee-deep in the mud with the soldiers, it's sometimes hard to see. Sometimes you have to pull yourself away a little bit unemotionally and look at your formation and say, are we doing the best that we can do? Do I trust my soldiers? Do they trust me? Am I as competent as I can be? Do I understand my doctrine? Do I understand the standards? Do I understand how to train? All those things go into understanding how you are influencing your organization. If you don't do that, then you end up, again, repeating the same mistakes over and over again. You could have a breakdown in trust. You could have a breakdown in competence within your organization. So again, it's looking at yourself, understanding that you have an extremely important role as non-commissioned officer. You're influencing America's sons and daughters every single day to do things that they wouldn't normally do.
So what does a unit with a culture of mission command look like?
I think that units with a culture of mission command, you see excellence. You see excellence in everything they do. You see pride, you see buy-in. And I think what's important is that you understand that your soldiers are human beings, and there's a human dimension that comes with everything that we do. It's understanding what motivates each individual soldier, because no two soldiers are exactly the same. It's understanding the soldiers within your organization. And over time, if you took me as a corporal many, many years ago and said, okay, you got this organization, go get after it. As an inexperienced leader, there were many things that I didn't understand about myself. There were many things I didn't understand about what motivated others. With maturity and with understanding through our doctrine, with understanding through role modeling and watching others, it created a huge impact on me. So for example, I'll ask a question of who has had an incompetent leader. I'll ask the second question of those who said yes, how many of those leaders were trusted? And if you look back on your career, I'm sure every one of us can say, hey, I have had a non-commissioned officer that I didn't trust. And why was that? It could have been an ethical issue. It could have been the issue of whether someone was competent. But at the end of the day, trust trumps all. You can do anything with a highly disciplined organization where people within that organization trust each other.
Thank you so much, Sergeant Major Prosser, for joining us in covering Mission Command and Small Unit Leadership and Army Doctrine and the NCO.
Thank you for allowing me to come out today and talk to you all, because it's extremely important. And I think doctrine and understanding the NCO's role in doctrine is extremely important to our Army.
You can join in on the conversation by following our Facebook and Twitter at NCO Journal, and also our Instagram page at NCO Journal Official. You can also put your knowledge to print and submit articles to get published by visiting our official NCO Journal website. Until next time, I'm Sergeant Joni Jackson.